Thank you for calling Learn Japanese in 20 seconds a day. Are you ready? Let's begin.
Kujo ga arimasu. Watakushi wa ayatsuri ningyo ga kirai desu. Doki ga shimasu.
To sign up for tomorrow's lesson, please leave your name and number after the beep. Sayonara.
This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
John Cruz.
I'm Mike Beats.
And it's been a long time since we've done one of these, but we're ready for the new year, and we're ready for the future. Now, you guys wanted to talk just briefly about the past?
I think so.
Okay.
I'll go first. When we posted, it seemed like it took a long time for people to notice that we had actually recorded a podcast about the decade in review thing, and obviously in looking back at some of the comments, I think that I at the very least should have done a little more thought or put a little more thought into the qualifications and made actually thought out a list as opposed to just sort of winging it, as is the nature of the podcast that we're doing. And so anyone that we left off, I wanted to apologize. It was no intentional slight. And I think whenever you talk about greatest or best ever, usually in sports you have to have reached some level of success to even be mentioned in the conversation. And I know that we left people out that probably would have been on that list, and we probably made the list so big that to be left off the list was in itself insulting. So, I think that if we were to redo it, I think that we would have been better off narrowing the list and saying this is our clear criteria that we're using. But if you look at the discussion online now, we're just listing people, and it's just lists of people. And I don't even know if that's that meaningful, because like I said, if you don't list someone, that's insulting. People can continue making lists of people that debated, and they're just lists. But I think that Christian probably made the best list. But you know, if I were going to talk about greatest, I probably would have said that you need to win probably one of the big three, TOC, NFL, or I guess NCFL, but maybe not. At least TOC and NFL to be in the conversation for best ever, or best of the decade. And the conversation could start from there. Then there could be another list of people that were great but never won it. But, you know, I think when you talk about greatest quarterbacks, the reason Dan Marino is –
Wait a second. It was boring enough when we talked about great debaters. If we're going to start talking about great football players,
Okay, I want to add two really quick things, or three really quick things, but they're quick.
One thing, just for clarification, sure. Where were these lists being published?
On VBD.
VBD,
now,
okay.
I think that there are three quick comments that I want to add. I agree with everything Beats said. I think obviously any sort of greatest or best, et cetera, list will always be emotional. I mean, one thing that I thought was interesting was some of the people we were being criticized for leaving out. We didn't really leave out. We actually did say them, or we listed them in other parts of the program, as it were, you know, like Strug's program, certain people's names got mentioned. I agree with Pizza that things should have been more organized and not been sort of a winging it kind of thing. But I guess the good thing that came out of this, I thought that ultimately there were some productive posts later in the discussion, which I thought were good, about how we measure things that and talk about historical memory and things like that. On a personal note, I thought it was good because I've been sort of looking for a project to get back into more number crunching stuff, and people pointed out why using objective data and setting criteria, as Beats talked about, is important. So I agree with that, and I think that that's kind of cool that I'll be working on something like that. The last thing I'd say is that I guess debate is kind of weird, because whenever we have discussions about, you know, in sports, I guess, and I know very little about sports, as most people know, but in sports, generally the athletes themselves, I don't think, are really engaged as much in the conversation, right? I mean, you have a much clearer demarcation between the commentator. I mean, I know that some athletes become commentators later on, but the casual sports fan is not usually an athlete themselves, whereas the casual debate fan is generally a debater or a coach, right? So there's certainly a more personal connection to any kind of list. Which I think is...
I'm just having this vision of the casual debate fan, like painting half his face blue to go to TOC or whatever. And I mean, it's just not taking. Okay.
Fair enough. But that's the point, is that you know, it's obviously a much smaller, much more close community.
Can you imagine debating with five guys, naked, half-naked guys painted in the back of the room? You know,
I think that would John has.
That's outrageous. That's outrageous. All right.
Well, okay.
That was a really awkward transition to tonight's podcast.
Tonight's podcast, where we actually don't need any facts whatsoever, because we wanted to talk, at least to start off, talking a little bit about the future. And I think we touched a little bit on it last time, but one of the things that definitely seems to be happening in schools, we're going through a transition from they will try to block any kind of electronic communication whatsoever. And they're moving along to actually letting people communicate electronically, putting wireless into schools, taking out blocking. I don't know if they're deliberately blocking it, but there's half the schools we go to, you can't use your cell phone and things like that. And actually enabling communication as compared to inhibiting or prohibiting communication. And I think that's going to have some effect on us going forward. This is the way we handle ballots and results and things like that as we move along, because we only use the paper ballots in the system we have now because it works in the universe we're in. But if we had an electronic universe, especially at colleges where people are strewn out all over in different buildings and stuff, I think we can run tournaments quite differently and quicker in those situations.
I agree. I mean, I already mentioned this in the last podcast way back when, that I think that the paper ballot will probably see its demise by the end. And on a lot of levels, it makes sense, right? I mean, in a world where things are increasingly electronic and connected, the idea that you can immediately submit your ballot, I think, is a good thing. And in addition to that, if you do have judges type comments into the ballots, which I think is important, if you have them type it in electronically, it's something that can be saved, which I think is also pretty neat, right? You can have a central
database. Brings up that question. I mean, it seems like this year the question came up, and I think it's come up before, and people were just starting to do this, which is just publishing ballots online anyhow, instead of printing up 10,000, printing up the copies and stuffing them and so forth, but just printing them online. And there were a lot of predictions that this was going to be the end of privacy as we know it and so forth and so on, which doesn't seem to have happened at all. People just go and read their ballots, and maybe some interested people will read somebody else's ballots, but you have to have an awful lot of time on your hands to read like other people's ballots in any great depth, considering that any tournament has, 500 to 1,000 ballots. It's just a waste of your time. So anyhow, I mean, the fact that we're publishing these ballots, nothing has really happened, I think, indicates that there isn't going to be any real flap if we were to do it systematically at every tournament.
The other thing about there being wireless and things like that, I think we're going to probably have to start answering the questions about when students have their are using their laptops in debate rounds, can they go online? Can they surf the web? Can they chat with coaches? Can they, I mean, all these sorts of things are going to be, are going to be up for discussion, I guess. And if there's going to be enforcement, I know that this last weekend, we were at a tournament at UNLV, and a judge noticed that a kid was chatting on Facebook during the round while he was debating, and he asked him to stop that. And then he noticed that the kid had continued doing it, but just a little more covertly. But ended up giving him a zero for not listening to him. Raise some interesting. I know that as soon as a round is done, I get text messages from all my debaters saying, sure, "Here's how I did."
Yeah.
Even before the decision is done, are we going to get are we going to have a day where just everything is open, where you can access any information you want during the debate round? And I don't know how useful that information is going to be, but just the idea that someone could access it is going to probably be an interesting discussion. And then enforcement, of course.
I mean, there's two different things there. I mean, getting somebody to help you. We're probably never going to want to move into that situation. Although, given the amount of time you have, how much help could you get? But I think, realistically speaking,
watching the round and my debater's in it?
We would want to not.
I don't know. I feel like there's a fundamental change to debate. I realize all these things are sort of fundamental changes to debate. I've never really understood the argument against being able to go online and get information, right?
Let's say all these kids that are in high school now are going to live 10 years from now, getting information all the time from everywhere.
Right.
And so prohibiting them from doing it now is, it's going to go there.
We're probably minorities in that.
Yeah, but
we are minorities in that.
But world is moving there. Everyone is moving there. And we're the minority now.
But we still have tournaments where the disclosure is forbidden, right? So
tournaments where you're not even allowed to read off your laptop.
Right, right.
Let alone.
Let me say something interesting about that. I want to mention something about the reading off your laptop. I actually talked about this with Jim at the beginning of the season. Something that really bothers me about that, about people who take a strident stand against reading off a computer or flowing on a computer, is that in a world where students' physical issues or motor impairment issues are being accommodated in schools, telling a student who is allowed to take notes on a laptop in school because he has a motor issue with his hand, but then giving him a hard time about it in a debate round, I think really sends the wrong message, right? And I think that people who are so strident about not allowing people to use computers in rounds need to recognize that there's a whole set of reasons why one might be using.
Yeah, but at least those are reasons for doing it that are pretty much just people are being stupid. As compared
to, stupid about that. I mean,
they won't maintain that.
Wait a second. I distinctly remember, and this was just 2.5 years ago, Matt Dinay, when he was a junior at NFL Nationals, the round he lost, and I really very rarely complain about judges or decisions, but this was ridiculous. I mean, Matt Dinay came in and he didn't read off the computer, but we were just sort of gabbing with the judges before the round, and one of the judges literally said, "Well, I think computers are the work of Satan." And I said, "What?" Right, and I said,
"Is this Catnats or Nat?"
No, this is at Natnats. Oh, okay. This is not Catnats. There's no biblical.
All right,
just
checking, you know.
Fair enough, but was serious about it. Said that, "Well, I think that's the work of the devil." And this is the woman kept saying,
"Was this a Mac or a PC?" I mean, if it was a PC, he's right.
I just couldn't. The woman was like, "Well, I would just immediately drop somebody for using a computer." I'm like, what?
I think there are people that,
and there are lots of people like that. I think maybe not.
Some people think that it encourages less eye contact.
That's
funny because
Barack Obama uses a teleprompter, which is electronic. I think debaters should walk around with teleprompters.
We're bringing in the technology for some people is still new. I mean, if you think about it, the idea that every kid in high school has a computer, we're not quite there yet, but for a lot of us, we sort of are there. And a lot of people who have been in this for a while haven't registered that yet. I mean, they're not allowing it in their classes or whatever, or they just don't see it. They just don't feel it. They just don't know what's going on. But you can only hold that kind of position for so long, and then you realize, my God, everybody does have a computer. I mean, how many teachers don't use a computer much in their day-to-day lives? I would say probably quite a few, although as time goes by, more and more do. They're using the smart boards. The good teachers will give, if you tell them bowling balls are going to make them better teachers, they'd try to figure out a way, they'd check that out. And so the good teachers, you say computers will make you a better teacher, they check it out. It turns out to be true. The bowling balls probably wouldn't be true. But whatever it is, good teachers will follow this stuff. Bad teachers, doesn't matter what it is, that they're not going to want to do it if it's changed. I mean, they're just lucky to get through the day. So there's a lot of people that aren't that good at what they're doing. I mean, it's not just teachers, it's anybody. It's anybody in business, people who don't know how to use their computers still in business situations. You tell them things and they look at you like, yeah, what are you, nuts? I don't do that. And it's like, okay, this is 2010. How do you not do that?
What are the top objections? I mean, I guess there's the...
Sort of connected to speaking. That's the when people are just against computers, period, even computers without connectivity, the issue seems to be, as Beat said, a belief that somehow this impairs your ability to speak properly.
And holding a piece of paper in front of your face doesn't.
Right, exactly. That's what I've never. That's exactly what I think.
Or I guess there's also the equality aspect of it, but you know,
that pretty much. I mean, at the point where netbooks are $250, $300, that goes away.
Yeah, or even you know, you can even get one for $100 now.
Yeah, but you know how much? I mean, textbooks cost as you know sure. as much as a netbook practically. So I mean that argument does go away. I mean I can understand that argument 5 years ago when a computer was over $1,000 and people didn't have them. But where was I last week? Columbia. I'm just looking around and you're looking into I guess it was a public forum. No. Oh no, it was Lexington. I'm sorry, it was Lexington. And I'm looking into a policy round and everybody had a couple of computers. I mean, they had big computers, little netbooks and laptops and the judges had them and the audience had them and everybody has them. I mean, this is life. This is absolutely life. When I have my debate meeting, but most kids have a computer or they have, you know, some connectivity if they want to use it. And yeah, you know, it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. So to say that, okay, and we know it's going to be more. I mean, the information is becoming more and more the air that we breathe. And to say, okay, well, we want kids cut off from that breathing because of something.
The answer is every kid needs to get an iPad because then they can hold it like a sheet of paper in everybody's hand.
They will, yeah.
But I mean, but seriously, I just don't understand that argument. The only real objection I can see to anything in terms of computers from my perspective, is communicating with your coach or with other people, because then I guess it takes away.
Yeah, I mean that one
line between who's actually doing the debating in the round, right? Because the argument against and big schools with lots of coaches always make the argument that the resource rich resource poor thing is ultimately not all decisive, because ultimately it's the debater, him or herself, who has to stand up and make and execute and do things like that, right? So the moment you start introducing the coaches live into the round, I think that gets a little awkward. But on the other hand, I don't really see why just being able to go online and find answers to things is really a bad thing. First off, I think it's very difficult to do that in a time.
I'm going to argue with what you just said. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, I mean, if I have a football game, can I talk to my coach? Yeah, I mean, at some point, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm in favor of it, but I'm saying that it's not all that, you know, straightforward situation.
Oh, no. I don't disagree with you, although I guess I would say that with a football team, if you're playing competitive football, everybody has coaches and everybody has a lot of money for coaches, right? I mean, on some level, there's a little bit more of a level playing field with that than there is perhaps in the debate.
There are a lot of football critiques out there, John. You just don't watch the game enough to realize it.
The big difference between a sport and you're talking to someone that really loves doing prepping arguments and things like that. I mean, I love doing that. But the difference between a sport is that this would be the equivalent of the coach walking out there
and playing,
handing the ball. You know, I think that for me to be listening to the round through the door or sitting in the back of the room and typing up answers for my debater to read, that I think then we were probably now I could see a new event being created where you have one person who is the prepper and the other person who is the speaker, and I think that could be a fun event, but
that's called TOC.
True enough. So anyway, I think that there's a difference between those things. But the biggest problems with the things that are standing in the way for this to become realized, where kids could actually go online, are going to be. I mean, not everyone has a laptop. That's true, and you know, there's still sort of this even you know kids that do have laptops. A lot of them don't like to read off the lab because it's difficult for them to organize.
It's not an easy thing to do to read off a laptop. I don't care how good you are at some of this stuff. It's harder than reading off a piece of paper.
In fact, I think that most of my debaters really resist reading off their laptop only because they have a difficult time organizing their speech, grabbing a sheet of paper that says something, all that sort of thing.
And then what happens when the other person wants to see your speech? You know, then you have to.
Well, I think that there's. I mean, as a judge, I think there's an obligation on the person reading off the laptop to make what they're reading available immediately. So, and I get upset when someone's like, oh, I'm reading off my laptop. And someone's like, or, you know, so one person is handing over the pieces of paper and the other person's like, well, I just have my laptop. That's why I think in policy debate, it's become, it's almost, from what I understand, a norm that you have a separate laptop just to give to the other team that has what you're reading on.
That may explain all the laptops I saw.
Yeah, I think it's a norm to have.
Our teams have two, at least two laptops each. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
They have a reading laptop,
right?
Uh-huh. The other team to read off of, and so as soon as your speech is done, you just do your flash drive and say, "This is what I read," or you just hand it to them and say, "This is what I'm going to be reading."
I think what we're saying is, I mean, and I think we're all in agreement that we're not going to allow students to really communicate with the outside world insofar as to get advice on how to run in a given round, but that as time goes by, let's say within the next decade, it is going to be commonplace for people to have computers in the round and to use them in the round almost everywhere. I think that the people, the Luddites who are stopping it now, will have moved on. And I think
what are the main arguments against having kids be able to research in the round? I mean, it can't be an accessibility issue, right? Because you can show
the other side. It isn't accessibility. I mean, it's if one kid has a laptop with Wikipedia and another kid or procon.org or whatever the, you know, if one kid has that and the other kid doesn't,
But in a world where everybody has access to the same thing, and I know that's like a, you know, utopian world, but in a world where everybody has access to the same thing, is there some separate argument against live updating of your information? I feel like some people just are also opposed to the general idea of getting more information once the round starts.
Yeah, I think that it means that kids are going to be lazier outside. I don't know. If you can, I don't see.
I think it's harder rather than lazier.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that anyone, way harder anyone that's going to wait until the round starts to do their research
not gonna
is not going to win. And I completely agree with that. But, you know, there are people that, you know, think the internet's in tubes.
It is funny that, I mean, some of the stuff that we have seen, the changes that we've seen, like posting results after rounds and not disclosing. I mean, we definitely have gone from not disclosing to most places disclose. I think everybody will disclose eventually. Because it's hard to,
if you don't disclose, the tournament will disclose for you.
I mean, I can understand maybe sometimes a new judge might be a little uncomfortable. When I have parents judging novices or something like that, but I mean, I'm not talking about that. And, you know, other than that, I mean, it's just the things change and you don't hear the arguments really that used to come out for this stuff. I mean, people had the arguments, they just say don't do it, but the arguments seem to have gone away because they're not great arguments against doing any of this stuff. They haven't stood and nobody cares about them. So it's just a few people that'll maintain. Like we have it here that our state, right? The state tournament, the CFL tournament, no disclosure, whatever. I mean, you know, you're going to find out 5 minutes from now anyhow. Yeah. So I mean,
things like that create situations where people can not break even though they won, which is very weird. But yes,
but it's not even a question of that. It's just, I mean, we went through this thing. You know what we used to do at my tournament at Bump, which is, you know, we have the it's a quarters bid, and so at the octos we wouldn't announce in the octos round, and then we would announce in public later on to build up the suspense. And Vaughn was tabbing, and he says, "Yeah, you're torturing these kids," which had never occurred to me in the past. I said, "You know, you're right," and we just stopped doing it. Yeah, you know, why am I torturing this? Going to find out anyhow. There's no, you know, it's going to make one person feel even crappier, and the other person, you know, I didn't get it. You know, once somebody posed it to me, I didn't get it anymore. I mean, the drama. Let them have their find out right away. They're gonna, you know. And the other thing is learning you lost in public is not quite the same as learning you lost in the round. Oh, good. We'll do it in front of 1,000 people that, you know, you lost on a 5-0. Oh, great.
Well, actually, at your tournament, you usually whisper the results. That sounds a little bit more like the Bump tournament. But anyway.
You know, just sit closer if you want to know what I'm saying. You know, I'm not going there.
What do you guys think? What do you guys think of debaters recording themselves. If, you know, most kids have MacBooks, or I shouldn't say most, a significant number. Everyone on my team has a MacBook. Just hitting record and
I'm okay
in garage that. In GarageBand.
I'm completely
do you guys okay with that. Object to that at all?
I mean, is the argument I've heard
you mean during the round?
During the round, recording the round.
Why not?
Well, one argument against that in the past used to be that's unfairly exposing what the other person is running, but I guess that argument has sort of fallen along the wayside. And
we're you got 27 partial people flowing it, you know.
Right. But even in a prelim, right? I mean, that used to – wasn't that one of the big arguments against recording? Like if you don't have the
I guess the only reason why we – the only reason I want my kids to record themselves is so that I can listen to them debate. Right,
exactly. We'll do about a redos.
You can't use the recording. You'd have to like find your way through 45 minutes of chit-chat as compared to a piece of paper where here's the third contention or something. So it's a terrible way to track stuff. I mean, if you just wanted to use it to prep for the next round. I mean, that's not.
No, I would want to use it for kids to listen to themselves.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, that's a different thing. Now I'm talking about what John was saying. I mean, that people are getting some kind of unfair advantage. I mean, if anything, they're really giving themselves a very fair disadvantage to try to suffer through that.
I could see some people saying that if all 10 Harvard Westlake kids are recording their rounds and then posting them on VBD so that everyone can hear what their opponents were arguing, you know, after each round, though, or posting everything. People thinking, I hit Harvard Westlake, so now I'm going to have all my stuff available to everyone else. But
although one thing we haven't heard much about, and I don't know where we're going with it in the future, is the whole case disclosure thing. I mean, this was the big thing down in Texas, and never heard about it again. What happened?
I think it's flared up again on LDDebate.org.
That's true.
To me, it seems like a lot of people are saying, just disclose your sites. I was back-channeled by Aaron Timmons about it, and I said, you know, that to me, it's, let's just disclose everything, and if we're not, then we shouldn't be congratulating ourselves for halfway disclosing. People should just disclose everything. If they want a bibliography, then I'll put together a bibliography of things that kids could go read, but I don't know how that helps anyone or anything in terms of real disclosure of what you're doing, because for the most part the debate is what should be disclosed is the arguments you're making, not just the cards that you're reading. I mean, people string together cards or string together articles that are from all over the place, and it's just not that useful anyway. So
I think it's be interesting to see what happens before the TOC with the disclosure. That's where
I mean, is it going to be a potential issue, or at least is it going to be discussed? It'll probably be discussed.
Up on the advisory committee yet, but I would imagine that that's going to be where it really comes to a head.
I don't think you'll do anything about it without discussing it in person. But you'll have a meeting this week, right, at Emory? So
I don't believe one has actually been called for this week.
Really? Unusual. Anyhow, yeah.
I just don't. Who's typing?
I just typed something.
There'd be no typing. We're not interesting enough for you?
Yes. What? No. It's interesting. I'm actually pulling something up on LDDebate.org and now responding to
that. That was a loud batch of type. What kind of computer are you using there?
No, you're just very close to my keyboard.
He's using a Commodore 64.
All right, whatever. Jeez.
The issue of disclosure, what do they call that? A collective action problem where some people are going to disclose and some people aren't. And the argument that only, you know, the compromise that Aaron seems to be saying is a good idea. I think it's a good idea. We're only the quote unquote resource rich schools, disclose their stuff. So the lone wolves don't have to feel like they're, you know, giving away all their strategies or something. I don't buy that either. What the difference is between a resource-rich school and a lone wolf.
Yeah, then we start tracking all this stuff and cutting very thin hairs that be more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, if I called Harvard Westlake not one of the big schools, I would probably get laughed at. But, I mean, I don't think we are. I'm a part-time coach. We practice once a week. And, you know, my kids don't spend a lot of time doing debate stuff. And, you know, so whereas, you know, there are kids that are by themselves, but they spend their whole life doing debate, and they hire private coaches, and they, you know, to me that there's no difference between the two potentially. And
I think that's a hard thing to come up with any real, you know, rules that make any sense that are really going to be applicable to anything. We were talking about the mutual judge preference before we started, and I've been writing about it. And that might be something to talk about for a second, because if you had asked me a year ago about mutual judge preference, I would have said, I don't know. And then if you asked me 2 months ago, I would have said, I think it's really going to be happening. And now you ask me today, and I'm like, I've been doing mutual judge preference now for about a month at various tournaments, various sizes, and come up with a lot of negative parts to it, some positive parts to it. And I wrote a little thing today, and I really think this is true. If I go to a very national tournament, and it's a tournament of size, an octos bid tournament, and you have mutual judge preference, it allows me to go through a very large field and isolate the judges who I know something about and say, okay, these are the judges I know something about versus the ones I don't know anything about. And I maintain that all these paradigms and all that nonsense that people write, most of it is absolutely useless. And the longer it is, the more useless it is. And usually the longer it is, the more pompous and idiot the person is who wrote it. Okay, and now you can test this for yourself. I mean, go to the wiki and look at it. And if it keeps going on and on, you tell me you want to be judged by that person. Short of having to go through all this nonsense and sort this out and what people really mean and what if they wrote it 2 years ago or 1 year ago, like if you wrote it 3 years ago and you had comments on theory, you're not going to, and you're an active judge, you're not going to have the same comments on theory today. I'm not going to say you're going to have gone from against it or to for it or vice versa. I'm just going to say it's going to be different because theory is much more prevalent. So there's all this kind of stuff. So unless somebody's in there updating their wiki every day, which is really like sick, you're not getting good information on a lot of the judges. Anyhow, my point being, you're going to try to isolate to the judges you know, to the judges you have some familiarity with. And this can be done equally at any national tournament because, you know, the Northerners will have the Northern judges and so forth and so on. So this is not a particularly bad thing. But at the smaller tournaments, there are so many negatives that they absolutely overwhelm all the positives because the couple of things is, first of all, the judges who are highly preferred, since it's a small regional group, everybody prefers the same judges. So everybody wants those judges. They're being worked to death. And second of all, there are a lot of judges who are not highly preferred who are sitting there for 2 days doing nothing. And it's not that I can take, okay, well, this is bracketed in such a way so I can put the lesser preferences here or there. I mean, I could do that if I had the gift of another 4 hours to run the tournament. But if I'm trying to turn this tournament around, I get the last ballot and I'm trying to turn it around relatively quickly and try to do the best I can in a competitive sense, I don't have time to really go bracket and find all those 3-3s for the people who are in the 0-3 bracket or the 4-4s or something like that. And so there's some real negatives built in because there's always people who whine and complain that they're judging too much. But lately, they are judging too much. I mean, they're coming to me and they're judging like crazy and they're complaining about it. And then there's the ones who are complaining that they're not judging at all. And I can't do it. Usually I could do something about that. And now I really can't do anything about that. And I'm getting a lot of animosity from both ends of the judge pool. And not a lot of benefit for the debaters, if the truth is known. Anyhow, that's my take on it.
Well, from my experience, it doesn't take long to do the bracket thing. I mean, I agree with you, at smaller tournaments, it's just tough. But you just need to make sure that, to me, that people have to give enough A's so that you can do the first two rounds where everyone is getting an AA round. Mm-hmm. That's what you have to do. After that, after people have reached their third loss, so maybe the first three rounds, after people have reached their third loss, then you can just go. You go in bracket order. I mean, this is TRPC,
TRPC is giving it the 0-5 and the 5-0 and all that kind of stuff.
No, but you can erase all that.
There's a way to
that.
Do it bracket by bracket.
You press, you go in bracket order, you press E, which erases all the judges and all the rooms. Then you just go through and you say...
Every time we were pressing... When Vaughn was pressing E, it bumped. The tournament was erasing itself.
Oh, see, we... Literally at VBT, and we ran a 7-round tournament, triples, doubles, in 2 days. And for the big rounds, that's what we would do. We would erase everything as soon as they all came in. And it's fast. It's even faster than trying to match everything up. Then you just go down. You start at the two downs at the most important. Then you work your way up, and then you go to the bottom. It doesn't take that long. But then again, we have the benefit of having a ton of judges.
If you're at all tight on judges, and the situations where I'm having this problem, I am tight on judges. I mean, where you're having, like Columbia is a very good example. I had not a lot of extra judges, and I had a very sizable number of A-plus judges. You know, ones... And that it was like, and then we're done. And then, you know, there's not a lot of middle ground. So there was like the A judges, and then there's the bottom judges. I guess we could have done it by, I mean, what you're saying, so you can just dump all the judges and do it by bracket. We were dumping the rooms because the rooms in mutual judge preference for some reason are so whacked out that you have no choice but to erase all the rooms and put in the new rooms.
Yeah, do it from scratch. I mean, we would look at it within a minute. We decide, are we going to redo this? As soon as that decision is made, we just do it and redo it.
There's another thing too. I mean, where you're getting to the point where, you're still in a situation where people have come and maybe for the first day they've done nothing. I mean, if you're doing this for the first three rounds, you realistically are, or you're doing it for the first four rounds. We have to give these things because I'm going with a down two. You got to be down two. So there's only a handful of people that are really out of it at this point. And you have to assume that they have the right preferences at the same time. You are, when people finally do get to judge, they are judging pretty bitterly crappy rounds.
My feeling is that, and I'm only talking about top flight. People have flown in, people have spent a lot of money to go, those sorts of tournaments. At a local tournament...
Yeah, but at that tournament, then you're getting all the benefits I said before, which is you're getting to isolate your group, everywhere.
And if you're a parent and you show up to judge at the VBT or at the Glenbrooks, then, you know, we're lucky we let you cover the obligation.
I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. But by the same token, most tournaments aren't that big. And most tournaments aren't,
But then I don't understand why there's an expectation that all tournaments need to be the same, right?
Because, they don't.
Right, exactly. I think it is... Well, first off, I think it's on some level unhealthy to totally limit out of debaters' experience the need to adapt. I believe that strongly. I mean, I think that there's just good skill going to local tournaments dealing with lots of different kinds of judges. I still fundamentally believe that. But even if you don't believe that, right, there's still a good desire to like have a tournament end in an efficient manner, have people feel that they're all being treated equally, right? Because when you have a very tight judging pool at a smaller local tournament, being able to really efficiently match true A's to true A's is very difficult, right? Then you have the problem where certain people are judging all the time, certain people aren't. And it does create a lot of misery. But like I said, I just think that the real problem is the belief that all tournaments are created equal. They're not.
Well, no, they're not. I'm not saying that they are, but I mean, I guess for me, it's a learning process that they're not. I mean, because it would seem to me that the benefits of a certain system probably ought to spread to everything, and they don't. I mean, you know, there's really no benefit to having mutual judge preference. That even like a bump, for instance, which I get, 110 people or something like that, 50 judges. I don't know. There's, everybody's going to want to prefer the same judges, so we're not getting a hell of a lot of benefit. Whereas at Bronx, I mean, Bronx is the only tournament that I'm working on, as in the tab room, where I would say that it would make sense to do mutual judge preference. So you can provide, because you can, first of all, you get the depth in the pool. You got a lot of different regions being represented. And I can give, first of all, I can give people a round off. We did that last year anyhow. We literally just wove through the judge pool and gave everybody rounds off. So, we weren't working people to death. So we're getting the benefit of, you know, not having to go through the 72-page wikis that people write, you know, and actually getting judges you actually know something about. We're giving the benefit of not having to work everybody to death, and also the benefit of not having judges who aren't really, you know, preferred. I mean, I might have some lesser-known judges or lesser judges there, but they're not in that same position. You know, they're not the chaperone. They're not the person who is really came there with an expectation of doing something. I mean, they are filling a slot. Maybe, you know, we can do something. The other thing I think we ought to be able to do is move them out into the public forum and stuff like that, where they'll be perfectly happy and perfectly busy, and not just sitting there on their duffs, you know, because I might bring some debaters, some of my ex-debaters who aren't that well-known. Well, they're not going to get any rounds.
This goes back to something Beats was talking about way back in one of our, I think this was one of our very, very first podcasts, right? I mean, there haven't been that many, but it feels like a while ago, right? About the problem that Harvard-Westlake had at Yale. Yale used a community preference system. Harvard-Westlake was one of the only schools from outside the East Coast at all to be there, right? So they felt very out of place in that kind of – with that kind of system. On the other hand, I think that kind of system works at a smaller local tournament, more regional tournament or more local tournament, because for the most part, everybody knows who the judges are, right? I mean, this has nothing anymore to do with I have a coach who knows every single judge. When you're at a regional tournament, you pretty much know most of the judges, right? And if you don't know the judges specifically, you know the schools they're affiliated with, right? So on some level, a system like that, I think works better. And I don't at that kind of tournament. I think Bump, and I've mentioned this many times before, Bump is also kind of a unique tournament because it's pretty ideologically consistent, as it were, right? Like most of the judges approach the round the same way, I find. That's why I think it's a pleasure to coach for that tournament, to prepare for that tournament. So I think that, again, not all tournaments are created equal. You have to take into consideration what the scope of the tournament, who's attending the tournament, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess what I'm reporting on is my own learning experience, and I'm learning that. I mean, I think that's what I've learned is that, you know, we're going to have different kinds of business. I like the community. I'm going to go back to community preferences at some places. I understand because I agreed and really responded to Mike's bit about coming from California to Yale. But by the same token, you may not know what the community is, but the community is essentially helping you out here because, I mean, we're not giving you bad judges because, you know, you're from far away. I mean, you're getting the same judges everybody thought were good judges.
But Beats's point is still very fair, I think, which is that the people who really only debate or judge in our region who we know very well, you are sort of being disadvantaged. And like I said,
I think it has
to do with the tournament itself.
But I don't think, I mean, MJP isn't going to change that at that tournament because they're still going to be the same judges that they still don't know.
No, but if I could pick the 20 that I do know and mark them as my A pluses, then in the 4-2 round or the 3-2 round, pretty good chance I'm going to get someone I at least know or wanted.
But when you were, in the actual event, I mean, did you get judges that you knew your guys did well? So they would be, presumably getting the judges.
No, I don't think we didn't clear anyone. We had, we had two kids go 4-2 that didn't clear I don't think we're going to go back to Yale, but just for entirely different reasons, I don't think we're going to go back to Yale. I will probably go to the Bronx to come to the East Coast.
I mean, Yale is a lot. I mean, the Bronx sucks. I mean, you know, ouch. But I would make that same decision. I mean, Yale is, feels very much like a regional tournament. With the nice college.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Whereas Bronx does not feel at all like a regional tournament to me. So traveling to the Bronx would be a radically different thing than going to Yale. And I would agree with that decision. I mean, wholeheartedly. It makes sense.
Yeah. So, anyway. The only thing that I guess when it comes to mutual judge preferencing is that and I had mentioned this before, that the biggest problem that I see right now is teams that just sort of freeload on the mutual judge preferencing, mm-hmm. where they bring a parent or, you know, someone who's not at all going to get even close to sniffing an A, and then expect that they get A judges when they didn't do anything.
And frequently, I'm sorry, but I'm not, I mean, I am going to make a generalization. I can't help but notice a lot of the schools are the biggest complainers about judges. And I'm very willing to make that claim.
Well, this is the thing I am instituting, at least at Bump, and I'm going to recommend that other people do it too, which is goes back a little bit to this, but there are so many people. I mean, the other thing about MJP is you have to have your judges set. And
that's true.
And people, and it's only a handful of schools, but they don't have their judges set. They keep changing them. They change them at the table. And my thing is, I'm going to recommend, look, if these people are changing them, when they get to the table, you just give it all of their, they get nothing but A pluses. I'm sorry. I'm tired of these schools. And it's for us around here, and I'm sure this is true everywhere, it's the same people. Week after week after week. At Columbia, we have one school who I've never seen them put in and have. I put in judges in advance and have those judges show up. And every day it's different judges. Now that, but they're coming to me and complaining that they didn't get their MJP. I have one school that had two judges that did not show up, off and on. They didn't show up on the third day when they were obligated to be there. The kids are breaking. You know, it's not like, and it's like, why am I giving these kids the benefits that, why are we giving this team the benefits that the teams who are good citizens have? You don't get these benefits just because we're nice. You get these benefits because you've at some point earned them. And I'm absolutely tired of the same people week after week after week. If I were able to do that, I would give you a list of them and you would know those names. And week after week after week, they're screwing up our tournaments. They're screwing up everyone who goes to those tournaments. And frankly, finding them. Chris Palmer wrote about this today or yesterday in his blog. Finding them doesn't help. Nothing helps. So maybe just saying, enough of you people, and you're not getting any benefit at this tournament, maybe they'll get the idea. I don't know. It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's people. Well, I've found that the teams that are, that have their stuff together, can usually get their stuff in on time, and it's the same coaches. It's the ones who, literally, and I can be sympathetic to teams that don't have a coach and who are student run.
None of these are those kind of teams.
Yeah. But even in that instance, just hire from the tournament then. Then I know in advance that I need to find someone to cover you, and I will do that.
Nope. We just have people who, are just freeloaders and inept. They're inept people, and we're supporting them, and we're paying the price. And like I said, I'm just tired of doing it. And at some point, I hate to punish the kids, but the kids are just as bad. Half the time, it's the same teams that where the kids are signed up, and then other kids show up. And I was writing today. I mean, this is just like sanctions. I'm going to sanction the country because of the leaders, but it's trying to get those people riled up. And maybe I don't know any other way to do it. I mean, short of not allowing them in, and Palmer actually didn't let people into the tournament because they were screwing up so much.
What I've done is my tournament's on February 20th. It starts on February 9th. Everything closes. I shut down everything. You need to stop typing, whoever's typing.
That's me. I'm trying to pull up something, just read in a moment. But okay,
just type slower.
I'll type very quietly. Sorry. I'm moving.
My registration is due on February 9th. That's when all fees are due. It's the drop deadline. It's everything is frozen. Your names have to be in for judges. So that's 11 days before my tournament starts. I'm going to charge $40 per change that they make. And now that $40 isn't going to come to me or my debate team. We're going to give it to a charity.
That's what I did at Bump.
Yeah, that's what Jim did at Bump, and was raised a lot of money for charity.
Yeah. I managed to double it with my work.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that hopefully that will cause some people. And I was talking this weekend with Christina Talungan, who used to be the coach at the Glenbrooks. And even, I mean, the number of people that still just stiff tournaments from payment is astounding. The idea that you're just not going to be invited back, that a letter will go to the principal. I mean, I think that would be something. If you just sent a letter to the principal saying there was unacceptable behavior, I think that could probably also change.
I mean, one of the things we did here, we had one school that was doing this, and we just, since it's just a handful of same people in all the taverns, we just stopped allowing them to sign up for tournaments, and they pay back their bills very quickly. And we're getting into that 50-minute mark.
Well,
So, well, I think we've covered...
We're ending on an unpleasant note.
Get off my lawn. That's all right. I don't think people come to... They don't come to me to be pleasant, I assure you. And I mean, I have the emails to prove it. So I'd be happy to share them. I'm happy to publish them.
I think that tournament's... have the right to stand up a little bit if they're a tournament of a particular caliber or reach to say your judge just does not meet the criteria for our tournament. I will be honest and say that there have been a couple of times where schools have tried to put in a very unqualified judge or a judge who just is going to be basically struck by every single person in the field. And I have not been hesitant to say, look, we got to work out a deal. Either this person's going to judge a different event or we're going to do something else. I think that that's also,
I think we do have to do that more. It's a little hard. I mean, the problem is, I mean, it's the tournament director. I mean, I'm tabbing the tournament. I'm sort of looking at what's going on in advance. And the tournament director sometimes have so many other things going on that they're not paying attention specifically to every person who's signing up. And that's a problem, you know.
Well, Lexi, did I talk about this before? Lexi Green brought up this idea where you just charge every entry costs $250. That's what the entry is.
Oh, you mean like the school entry?
Nope.
Oh,
every person.
Okay.
Each entry is $250. Then you tell me who your judge is, and if it's a judge that we want, then I'll knock off $150, or I'll knock off whatever, so that the decision whether or not we want your judge becomes up to the tournament director, and if we don't want your judge, then this is your fee, and we're going to hire up on your behalf.
It's hard to do.
That seems like a lot per... I mean, I'm not actually opposed to that idea. I think that's an interesting idea, but $250 seems like a...
That's just a number that I'm throwing out.
The concept
is that that it's up for the team that instead of charging kids for not bringing a judge, you're essentially saying, I will hire your judge and give you the discount. Right. Or give you the...
Yeah. Like I say, I mean, that requires a level. I mean, I think the three of us, obviously Lexi, are that kind of tournament directors. A lot of people have so many other things going on, and they're fighting for rooms with the schools and the food and blah, 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 blah.
Well, yes. On the other hand, I think that tournaments need not be a one-person show, right? Like, I mean, you're not running tab at your own tournament, so perhaps...
Preparing for it, though. Preparing for it tends to be...
But couldn't there be? I've often helped at area tournaments recruit the judges. I don't think that it's unreasonable that somebody might help be that person. I mean, you know, again, this is
it depends on the tournament director. Sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously, I go to you to get all the judges in any tournament I can. Yeah, so you know, you're our pimp.
So we started with the half nude people cheering on the debate round and ended with a pimp.
It was full nude. It was full nude.
Okay, full nude. All right. On that note.
On that note, it's been swell, and we'll try to get back into a regular weekly.
The iPad really is going to have to be the tech tip next week.
Oh, iPad.
No one's going to be able to touch it.
You'll have to wait. It's not coming out for 2 months, and I've already gone on record as saying. So.
Wrong. Rude.
All right. On that note, guys, we shall be done.
Transfer of data is complete.